Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
It was funny when Ryan stepped on that first intro he tried to do.
Oh, you fucking.
To another episode of Jason's a Dick.
This is the 75th. No, this is only like the 65th Jason is a Dick.
No,
this is called Brainstorm Brewery.
This is about 50 episodes because it took you a while to get comfortable on the cast. You had to suck up for a little while before you actually became a dick.
That's true. Like, I'm pretty sure you said the word honor about 40 times the first time you were on the cast.
That's only because I read a book about Bushido, okay?
Oh my god, I remember seeing tweets about you like, oh man, I'm so sad, I got this podcast withdrawals, man, I just want to be on a podcast. Boo-hoo.
You were trying to whore yourself out to everybody before we signed you on.
To be fair, I still am.
You know what I think about that? What's up, the frog
say? I hate you. I was done listening to that song like 2 weeks ago, but thank you.
That really ran its course. Like, Gangnam Style hung around for like months, and like everyone was already sick of that Fox song after like a week. By the time the novelty t-shirts were made, everybody was sick of it.
I just found out about it. It's incredible.
Oh, it just made its way to Oklahoma.
Oh my god.
You guys are gonna get the Macarena pretty soon.
Dude, I just heard it a few days ago.
Wait, the Gundam Style?
No.
What's the Fox saying? Marcel, do you know about this?
No, I don't know about this.
Oh my goodness.
What?
Is this like only a thing in the North? Like, how do we know about this and you guys haven't heard about this? You just found out about what does the Fox say?
Yes.
Never heard of it.
That's been a thing forever. Marcel? No, my roommate from Kentucky said that he's known about that forever.
It was published. It was published on September 3rd, 2013. So like, it can't have been forever. But Marcel, you just need to, it's some, European guy who does kind of like parody music. It's a song about what the fox says, because no one knows. No one knows what the fox says.
Why are we doing this? This is a September podcast topic.
No, this yeah. is now. I
this
just
thing is 100 in meme years. Like, it's done.
No, we're incredible. Still.
Why are we even talking about this? This was done. We need to move on to something productive. If you haven't listened to What Does the Fox Say?
Wait, Corbin. Go on, finish what you were saying.
You should go listen to What Does the Fox Say. The elephant says toot. Fish goes glub. But what does the fox say? You just need to go, for anyone who hasn't listened to it and you want to hear some awesome meme, it's a pretty incredible song.
You know what another incredible meme is also? We need to make a t-shirt for Merfolk.
Oh. Okay. That was going to be Shut Up Corbin.
I thought it was Corbin too.
We should do the Shut Up Corbin. Well, we got t-shirts right now on Teespring.
If you talked about the Shut Up Corbin, like if you actually did the Shut Up Corbin t-shirt, you'd have to find something else to talk about for t-shirt.
That's true.
I'd be okay with that.
We can come up with more. Shut Up Again, Corbin.
Well, I mean, we got the two piece right there. You got the Shut Up Corbin and then you got the four Merfolk.
Okay, here's homework for our fans. Come up with the onomatopoeia that sounds like a spoon hitting a bowl of ice cream next to a microphone. I don't know if it's ping or clang or whatever. Whoever comes up with the best onomatopoeia will get some Brainstorm Brewery tokens.
And also probably be featured on a shirt.
You know, yeah. I didn't think we'd ever get to use the word onomatopoeia on the podcast, so props for that.
And so right now,
it's Oklahoma.
And if people like the podcast, we got, as we said, the shirts on Teespring. We're doing a logo. We're going to have 25 shirts to make our goal. You want to buy them. They're $19 plus, I guess, shipping. Full color, one-sided shirts. These are going to be the shirts you're going to see Ray Future Pro. He's going to be wearing them on camera, you know, so this is going to be part of this print run. So support the Brew Crew, support the team, get some shirts. We'll get some cheaper shirts once we figure out and get a somewhere where we can print them up, but we're doing it through the Teespring, so that's as cheap as we can make them. So
these are limited edition shirts, therefore.
Exactly. You know. So get your hands on them now while you can before the Teespring goes up.
Yeah. And we promise whatever we print on these ones will not be printed in the future, so it's not like everybody else is going to have the same shirt. Like, if you're one of the original guys, like, these will be unique.
Yep. Speaking of unique, let's talk to the picks of the week.
Yes.
You guys got some stuff.
How does that relate to uniqueness?
I want to say thank you for everyone that replied and helped with this data mining. There's still opportunities for people, so I guess it'll be open for another week, maybe a little bit more, but send in your email as soon as possible, get your free tokens, and a possible chance to win a playmat and other goodies. So hit us up, and if you're interested in doing a set review, let me know, because that's going to be quite a challenge.
All right, so I'll start off with Pick of the Week here. And because of True Name Nemesis, which is the saddest merfolk there is, because it doesn't come in foil for my deck, because of that, though, you know, people were kind of on the merfolk hype train here, that it's going to be playable again in Legacy and good in Legacy. So what's interesting about it is that Curse Catcher and Marrow Reedry have both gone up. You know, those uncommons that are four ofs in the deck from, you know, back in lore when Curse Catcher's up to like $5 or $6. Reedry's from up from like $2 to $4. But Master of the Pearl Trident and Saberwheel Adept haven't moved at all yet. So I think that they're probably all fine pickups right now, especially, you know, maybe not cash or whatever, but to have them in your trade binder for people who, you know, are maybe thinking to get into it, because Merfolk's also a pretty easy deck to get into in Modern. So I actually trade that stuff out pretty decently. But like in particular, Silvergrove Adept and Master of the Pearl Trident may be the better places to be just because their price hasn't moved at all yet. So that's my pick of the week, are kind of those Merfolk cards. Like I said, I don't think they're going to go crazy expensive or whatever, but True Name Nemesis is very, very good, and it's very good Merfolk. The card brings the beats even when it's by itself, and if you happen to have another guy on the table, you know, he's pretty unstoppable. So I really do think it's going to make Merfolk, you know, a little bit of a resurgence here, just because it dodges a lot of the trouble that the deck had and that it can win on its own. So I think it's going to bring about some more popularity to the deck, and that means that those cards are good to have right now.
Fair enough. I mean, that kind of relates to my pick of the week, which you actually was kind of made before the cast. But I think that Stoneforge Mystic is not a bad place to be looking either. I think that's a good combo, and it hasn't gone up in a while. And I think True Name Nemesis can fit into a good blue-white shell. I mean, those already exist, and you play it alongside with things with, like Jace and stuff. It's going to make it even harder to interfere with. And beyond that, the other pick of the week that Jason and everyone else decided, and I got quoted on now, is I believe you should be picking up Sands. Yes, it is not the beginning of 2012. It is the end of 2013. But I guess that would have been the beginning of 2013. But either way, I think that that card has potential for the long term, and I think it can easily be, I mean, a $5+ card eventually. I think in 2 years or so, it would be lucky to hit $5, but I could easily see it happening. The fact that it says every upkeep makes it extremely good in EDH, and there's a number of people who play Tristani and stuff that I've heard starting to play the card, and I don't think it's going to immediately go up, but I could see in 6 months it being $2 and then slowly climbing up over the next year and a half or so. That would not actually be my pick of the week, but I was forced to mention that, as I will be quoted by Corbin.
$5, seance, 2 years.
Okay, guys. Yeah, I've got sort of a question for Marcel. Since Marcel knows a little bit more about the Modo market than I do, in honor of my series that I just launched with my first article last Thursday on brainstormbrewery.com called MTGO Zero, because I'm a total noob at MTGO Finance, I've been going to MTG Goldfish every day, and I've been checking out the cards that are on the move, but I don't know if a card going up by, say, 41% means it's time to dump it, or if it's something you should be picking up. So I'm looking at the card Temple of Mystery that's moved up 44 cents, which is a gain of 41% today. Is that something that it's too late to pick up? Is that something that is going to translate to moves up in paper? Or is that something that we should dump if we have?
I like this card. I've been picking them up at around a dollar, and even when it was under at the 80 cents or so, just because it is a blue card. It's a blue scry land, and eventually is going to see his play. So I think, is that $1.20, $1.50 right now?
It's $1.51. So you liked it at a dollar. Do you not like it at $1.50?
I like it less at $1.50 because we're starting to see some of the other temples, like, they're not going that high. Like, the Temple of Bandons at a dollar. You got Temple of Silence at $1.80.
Triumph is actually down today.
Yeah, Triumph is down. 250 and you got 225 for deceit. So we might actually see these temples hit like the best ones at $2 and the other one's going to be like $1. So at $1.50, I think it's just going, it's hitting a high and I think it's going to probably dip down to $1 again. And I would buy them at $1. I got no problem with that. And no. even at $2, I mean, I could see it be at a $3 card, maybe a $4 at most. But if you see like, you know, Innistrad and their dual lands, like, They didn't get outrageous prices like they did in paper.
Do you think this is going to translate to paper? Is this something, should I be looking into why this card is up so much?
I don't think so, actually. Not to butt in, but I was just going to say, I think the main reason for it going up on Moto recently is, actually block. I've seen a lot of the red-green decks converting over to red-green-blue for like, Prognostic Sphinx or whatever that guy is. And, or not Prognostic Sphinx. Is that the
I would say Prognostic Sphinx. Yeah, that's the guy that surprised three when you swing with him.
Yeah, and I've seen a ton of people like adapting into that, and Vapor's End, or Voyage's End, excuse me, God, I'm terrible with the names in this set so far. But just to be able to deal with the, like, the mirror matches. And I think that block is popular enough to move the price a little bit on Moto, especially right off the bat, but I don't necessarily know that that's gonna equate over to paper, because I haven't seen it really moving too much in Standard.
Okay, there you have it, people at home who aren't rolling your eyes because you already know a shitload more than I do about Moto. It seems like if something is moving in block, that's going to move in Moto and not paper, so you should definitely do some investigation if you see a big precipitous move like that, because chances are it's not always going to translate into paper, or this would be a lot easier and everybody would be a millionaire at it.
Well, Temple Mystery at 325 in paper, honestly, I don't think that's a bad pick up.
Yeah,
I like all the temples. I haven't traded it or sold a single one. I'm just picking them up in every trade.
I mean, yeah, I've been moving them, but I've been selling them consistently around the 450 to 5-ish mark, and that's okay for me. So I think even if they're going to go up, the real-world market on them is where it's supposed to be, and it's fairly close to the retail. So even if the retail goes up, I don't feel like the TCG players / eBays are going to go up necessarily.
All right. That does it for me. Imagine how much I'll know about Moto in 1 week's time.
Yeah. I've actually been out of the loop a little bit. I've been working so much, but, let's see. I'm thinking from Moto, a decent pick of the week is Liliana of the Dark Realms. Card is like 290. I think you could probably find it for like around 250, 260 or something. I mean, that just seems pretty like a bottom for a Planeswalker.
And that's been going from about 3 to about 4.5 and then back down again in cycles. Like, I actually bought some Lilianas in paper. When I, like, you know, this is me being Moto noob, I looked at it, I was like, holy shit, it's up 50% in one day? Yeah, I'll buy a bunch of these in paper, and, like, they're just not moving in paper. So, do you think you think it could hit 4.5 again, and it's just, like, cyclical?
I can see 4.5 to $6. Like, I really think, you know, just, there's gonna be a big devotion deck, maybe in the next block, the next set when it comes around, that you'll see Mono Black is already, you know, primed to have a good devotion count. And this was fit into a Mono Black strategy that can just have, let's say, a fireball or something just to close out the game with a high count of mana. So I think, you know, this card will play along with that strategy as a redundancy for Nykthos. It's a Planeswalker at this price. I mean, there's a chance it doesn't do anything. But I don't see it dropping any lower than where it's at right now. So I think you're pretty safe picking this up as a more of a long term. It may not see nothing until rotation of the next rotation, but I don't think you're doing bad at this point.
So you like to pick up cards. If I'm looking at MTG or Goldfish, I mentioned a card that was, on the left side of the page that has all the cards that are way up. Do you tend to scout cards that are way down and you think they're a little too cheap?
Yeah, I mean, just because the way that I like to manage my risk and how much time and effort I got into it, I'd rather, you know, pick up cards when I know they're at their bottom and they look like really good cards and they have a chance to go up and the high price is good. Like, Ravnica was really good. Desecration Demon is now the all-star right now. That was like, you know, really low 50 cents cards and other stuff like, you know, Mizzium Mortars and other things like that I knew at that time was as good. And right now it's starting to just identify cards that are at their bottom and eventually they will realize a price eventually. So you're just sitting on your money until it becomes something. And some of them won't do it. There's quite a few that just stay exactly what you bought a year later and you just sat on your money and you didn't do anything with it, so you're wasting away. But some, you know, there's quite a few of them that will hit if you know how to pick your cards right and you know what are good Magic cards.
Very much.
All right. Did we hit everybody? Did we get a pick of the week out of Marcel?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Did we use sleep the last 5 minutes?
Jeez.
I'm tired and look at you. What ice cream have you been eating?
Well, that was like the talk about, never mind, ignore me.
You don't have an ice cream finance tip, like the new special edition Schweaty Balls ice cream that's only going to be out till the end of the year? You don't want to pick that up? Cans of Surge style?
If I picked it up, I'd eat it, though. That would be a problem.
It's funny.
Are you saying you put the Schweaty Balls in your mouth?
Schweaty Balls. You know we're going to have the first batch of the Black Ale, or the Black Stout.
Black IPA?
The Black IPA?
Yeah, sorry, the Black IPA. My bad. I'm tired. Yeah, so I believe that's the first round is going to be ready to be tested. Yeah, so we're going to have Slick Jagger and Motika. They're going to try it out and tell us. But they did come up with the flavor that they said was excellent. They thought would be a great brainstorm brew, but it was an actual Black IPA. So.
That's okay. A unique brew for our unique podcast. I like it.
Well,
it could be the worst beer by default.
We're going to see. If the Black IPA comes out really good, then we'll just go with that. But if they got something good, we might as well, you know, if it tastes good, let's do it.
I would love it if it was not an IPA. I went to Boulevard Brewery over the weekend and got a tour, which I've never done before. It was a pretty cool thing. But yeah, I found out that I definitely do not like IPAs.
A little too bitter and hoppy for you?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I had like a lighter IPA there that actually was much better than, you know, the IPAs I've had in the past, but on the whole, I prefer, you know, like just a wheat beer. But so that IPA, I guess there are IPAs I would like, but in general, the stronger IPAs are too bitter.
Well, you know, we do get the occasional beer content, on this podcast. If you're interested, a fan named Andrew Coleman is actually going to be starting a beer article on brainstormbrewery.com twice a month. So, make sure you check that out. I think the working title right now is Serum Visions. Serum Visions being a, I don't know, like a drunker brainstorm, I guess, for that one blue mana. So definitely check out Serum Visions on brainstormbrewery.com.
For sure. That sounds good. More than just finance stuff on the site. I like that. You're doing a good job, Jason. Community manager.
I'm excited because I'm trying to learn about beer and not just be such a beer noob. So I'm excited for it.
We'll get you there, Corbin. First thing you got to do is just put down the water.
You know, I watched Stephen Colbert the other night, and he pulled out a Bud Light Lime on camera and said it was delicious. I'm in good company.
He's... Oh, man.
You probably think he's really Republican, too.
What?
You just shattered his world.
What?
You didn't see? Yeah. He roasted... What was that, the inaugural, or when did he go over there? The guy invited by the GOP?
Oh, yeah, the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yes. Oh my goodness, that was the ultimate troll. I cried seeing that for the first time.
You know, there's people where I live. You guys can't go around saying bad things about him. I'll tell them you don't think he's a Republican. It may not end well for you.
We're gonna disappear. We're gonna lose our hair is gonna become binder twine in Oklahoma.
Stephen Colbert isn't Republican. Next, you're gonna tell me the Easter Bunny isn't Republican.
Oh, man.
So we got a letter? Is that what we got?
Let's talk about Commander decks first here.
Hey, Corbin, read the letter, man.
Okay. I will read the letter then.
I can't believe that worked.
Jason just gangstered you. Damn.
Put me on the spot. Great. Let's ignore the order of the show notes. Okay, then we've got a letter.
Show notes?
The letter is from Andrew Lawrence. He says, hey, I've been listening for a while. Really enjoy the podcast. I think you have a good mix of hosts, and Marcel does a great job as the main host. I'm not a value trader and don't play standard, so I'm really
Wait. Marcel's the main host?
I knew Jason was having an issue with that.
I'm trying to read this letter you asked me to read, Jason.
Okay. I don't remember asking you anything. Anyway, move on. I agree with the writer.
I not appreciate if you did not interrupt me reading this letter you told me to read it. Anyways, Andrew Lawrence says he's not a value trader. He doesn't play standard. He's just looking to trade the stuff he drafted for modern playable cards. His question is about organizing binders. Okay, you'll like this, Jason. He says, way back in episode 5, he just listened to it. You gave great advice about keeping all the stuff you like away from your trade folder, which instead only be cards you see as a dollar sign. I don't, is episode 5 before or after you came on, Jason?
It was clearly on that episode. Unless, I don't know, maybe it was before me and that's why there was good stuff.
Alright, I don't know. He wants to know about organizing. Should he organize by color or set? Should he mix in the foils or keep them separate? So I guess, how do you guys sort the binders? Like, what are your typical binder layout when you go to an event?
See, the way I do it, I click through my screen on Moto because it keeps it real organized by color, or if I click this filter.
I have multiple tiers of binders. You know, I've got like the stuff that's over $100 in its own binder. I've got like if we're off by a dollar, I give them the foreign and foil binder of just like, you know, dirtily foreign on foils and dirtily foils. And then I have like a main binder. I have that organized by color and, I tend to put the good stuff up front.
See, that's kind of the way I work too. I have like the regular binder. And then I have all cards under $15 to $20. Except for like cards I'm trying to get rid of, you know, like I have like Jace in that binder because, you know, that's a card I'm trying to trade out of right now while it's high. But usually the general rule is under 20. I just organize it by color. I put all the foils in the back, separate from the rest of the stuff. And then I have the nice binder, which is everything. It doesn't get pulled out very often. You know, you don't always want to throw dual lands in front of somebody's face, or they're just going to fixate on them and you're not going to be able to work out a good trade.
Or so you'll intimidate them and they'll just be like, oh, forget it.
Right. So I have that binder, but the thing is that not only is it expensive stuff, I also use it to put the stuff in that I don't want to trade. So it's like, I had shock lands in there because that way they're there. I have a mommy. If somebody really wants them, and the numbers are right, I can trade them away, but they're not just immediately going to get seized upon because that binder's not going to be pulled out as much. So it's kind of a way, just as sometimes I put the higher end stuff in the first binder that I'm trying to trade out, I'll put the cheaper stuff in the expensive binder just because I don't want to get rid of them. So that's kind of the, you know, if you don't want to trade something at all, it shouldn't be in your binder, period. It should just be at home or whatever. But if you have, there's no reason not to split your binders up with the stuff you want to trade right away or the stuff that maybe is a little more difficult to trade, like the expensive cards. Ryan, how do you do it?
I honestly don't do much trading anymore. I do some at the local shop, but most of the time it's like people contacting me and letting me know what cards I need. When I'm traveling to events, it's mostly just selling stuff now. And if I do, I go out on the trade floor, if somebody goes on the trade floor for me, you just kind of take a binder and get a bunch of cards in it.
Okay, Baller, I'm sorry we even asked you that question.
Well, trading's beneath me, so.
No, it's not even that trading's beneath me, it's just that, like, I don't have time anymore. I really don't. You go to, like, the major events and stuff, and there's not, I mean, A, everyone on the trade floor just wants to shark you, and I would rather just sit there all day and have a website up. If somebody wants to do it that way, like, that used to bother me so much, and now I just don't care. Like, it's so much easier than trying to be diplomatic about everything, like,
I mean, that's true. Like, trading is not, it just depends. Like, at GPOKC.
It's not what it used to be.
No, it's certainly not. But like, at GPOKC, you know, there certainly were those people out there who were dealers and sharps, and some of them were jerks, but there are real people at events too, who want to trade. You know?
I've just found that the amount of people that want to trade, I mean, it's not only that, but they have to have enough quantity too, because for me, you can sit there and deal with the dealers, or I can be home doing, you know, other work. Is it really worth, like, there has to be enough value per hour, and not even necessarily that you're getting value in the cards, but just trading enough stock at one time. I mean, sure, I can go and trade with somebody and get rid of three cards I need for three cards that, you know, or three cards I don't need and get three cards I need, or I can sell well, but how many of those trades can I get in, and how many people do I have to deal with where it's like, no, I can't deal with you because you're
right. Right.
It's just becoming less and less worth.
You know what I found that helps? I sell all my shark bait on TCG Player. Like, anything they would want, it's already for sale anyway. So the stuff I've got to trade is, like, pimp EDH stuff, and that's going to EDH players, who are the most pleasant people to trade with anyway.
I absolutely agree with that. I don't like having to sift through all the people to find a decent person to trade with. And it's just impatient.
Playing EDH at, like, the last GPO was that.
What's your general's name?
EDH. Caridor Ghost Chieftain. I've learned this before the cast.
I thought you were going to say go something else then.
Because if you listen to after the cast, you'll hear him as he could not answer that question.
Look, man.
You just did that to yourself.
It's just there. And it doesn't usually cast, all right? But I've played, like, 5 games of EDH in the past month, okay? That's like a big deal
for
me.
You know, Corbin, you got a way out if you said, oh, well, my copy of Carador is in Japanese foil, so I don't really read his name, I just know what he does. That would be a great out if you just said that, but you didn't.
I don't think copies, no, that would have been terrible, because the card doesn't exist in Japanese foil.
Oh, that's true, he was only, wasn't he?
He was a German, at least.
Boom!
They did German Commander, didn't they? Yeah. That's where all the scavenging came from.
They also did Japanese.
Not foil.
No, but they did Japanese.
Sure.
The full size one. Not the full size one.
That's a lie. No, I think.
They did an 8x10 of him, and that one was foil.
Yep, so that was foil and Japanese, so there is a foil Japanese one.
Okay. I like my cards to be playing size. Anyways, at events, I actually just sit down, we'll play ADH and put my binders next to me. You can kind of attract not the sharks as much that way. And if the sharks do come over, you can kind of let them sit next to you, look through your binder. It's not going to be worth your time. You can just be like, oh, I'm just playing my game, man. Don't worry about it. That's kind of one of the ways I've seen to just, you know, then where you're still doing something because you're playing a game. So you're having fun sometimes. But you can still get some trading in that way.
I don't know. Like, it's just so tedious. I just don't like dealing with most of the people who trade anymore.
You just got to play EDH, Ryan. Get an EDH with us. Come on. Learn what your general's name.
That sounds even worse than, no, not at all. I've tried EDH, and EDH for me is not fun for anyone else. I cannot play EDH casually.
You don't let me build you the deck, Ryan.
No, I won't play it.
You just play it, and then you gradually take out the cards that are too good.
Not only is trading beneath Ryan, having fun while playing EDH is beneath Ryan.
No, it's not fun. Like, that's the problem. My version of fun, I'm a combo player. My version of fun is like, haha, I made you wait 45 minutes to watch me combo or you scoop. Like, that's fun magic for me. That's why when I play Legacy, like, I get to play combo. I get to play Spanish Inquisition. The deck that wins on turn one and your opponent never gets to play a card. Like, that tells you what kind of magic player I am. I'm that douche. So.
Spanish Inquisition is what, the Sex Panther of Legacy, right? 60% of the time it works every time and the other part of the time it just does absolutely nothing.
It's a little over 70%, but no. And that's only your turn one. You can go off. I mean, as in the late end of the game as your opponent will let you.
Sure. All right, moving on.
Just like every deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, your odds of winning go down, but I have won games versus control on turn 6, 7, so on and so forth.
Okay. You know there's an infinity combo in those commander decks, I believe. They got one built into the Gen deck.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this the Commander 2013 we're talking about?
Yeah, the commanders with the no names, Nemesis.
True name Nemesis.
Oh yeah, true name Nemesis. Whatever, that name sucks.
It does suck, and it's not even foil.
So have we found out about if these are going to be a limited print run? Because everything I've seen says they are not going to be a limited print run.
No, they're going to be a Walmart exclusive. You're going to get them at Walmart for $39.99.
So speaking of true name Nemesis, it's like $40 on eBay, just the true name Nemesis, whereas like the decks are going to be $30, and they're going to be at Walmart and Target. Well, what's your regional crazy named grocery stores like Food Lion and Meijer and Giant Eagle and all kind of your crazy regional crap. Local thing is, just insert that name there.
Game stores are getting them too, though.
It's crazy that people are paying that much and that people are charging more for these decks because, like, Mark Rosewater came out and said that if demand is there, they're going to print more. Like, cards are going to be there. So I cannot advocate spending more than MSRP on them.
Okay, so what about the scenario? Your local store is charging $70 for the one with the true name Nemesis. You're like, fuck that noise. You go to Walmart, the cupboards are bare. They've got all the other four decks, but they don't have the one with true name Nemesis. What do people do in that situation if really what they're looking to do is get value and the specific deck? Because I think the Baleful Strix is in that one as well.
Okay, so you find out what day Walmart restocks, and you go back 2 days later when they restock and you buy it.
Well, here's my parable. If you remember last time, the one that was huge at launch was Political Puppets. That had a Flusterstorm in it and I think Chaos Warp. So everyone's like, oh, holy walls. Everybody wanted Political Puppets, like irrespective of the deck because it was like Zedru and just like a bunch of dirtly garbage. That was the one that sold out the fastest. Then about, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks later, there was that big Legacy Grand Prix in Indianapolis when we were at the football stadium for whatever reason. Maverick took off at that event, and everyone's like, oh god, we need scavenging oozes. So I went back, and I went to, like, those same Walmarts that were sold out of Political Trickeries, and there was Counterpunch just sitting there, because none of the players really wanted it. So that was the one that got it bought up next and cannibalized. If you look at their prices now, even though the Political Puppets and the counterpunches disproportionately went out of the hands of EDH players and were opened the most, you know, those are the ones that are close to their value before. They only double. Political Puppets is like $55-$60 on eBay. Counterpunch is like $55-$60. If you look at the red, black, white one, Heavenly Inferno, I think, the Angel one, that's $120 on eBay, and they're selling. So even if you can't get the, who knows if the one with True Name Nemesis and Baleful Strix is going to be the huge one. Like, there's going to be something in those other decks, and the extent to which they actually appeal to the community is going to matter, I think, a lot more than the individual singles.
So well, what's interesting...
I think you just buy all of them, because you never know which one's going to be $120.
Well, yeah, like, that was Heavenly Inferno's one with Kalia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, the one that actually... It's interesting because it's actually expensive because of EDH appeal, not Legacy appeal.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah.
So that was obviously their intent.
Obvious, like, wow, True Name Nemesis and Baleful Strix, wow, how could Spikes not want this? I think the one that's going to get there long-term is going to be the one that appeals to EDH players. Because EDH players buy those, go to Walmart and buy Commander decks. Like, there are so many people we don't know about, and there's so many more casuals than there are Spikes. That I think the one that appeals to them, and we don't know what that one is yet. So I think you just buy all of them, and maybe in equal amounts. If you can't get the one with the True Name Nemesis, I think it doesn't even matter.
Okay, so even though they're going to reprint these, they're going to reprint these until they meet demand, Jason, you still think they're long, medium term, like a couple years? You think 2 years down the road it's worth having these?
Yeah, because someone's not going to buy them. There's going to be some sets that are not going to be reprinted because they're not going to sell out. And those will be probably the ones that become valuable later on down the line.
Yeah, I mean, I'm buying cases of them, personally. I mean, if you can get them anywhere near MSRP, just buy them. Like, they're all gonna be good, and there's so many cards. Look at all the P3K cards that are in these. Some of these were $50 cards before this. Like, they're not going to immediately drop to nothing. And there's a lot of value in these decks. Like, even right now, I think you can bust most of them open, if I am correct, and make your value back, plus some.
But I wouldn't advocate popping these for $40 if you're paying 30.
Yeah.
If one of them's gonna be $120 in a couple years.
Yeah.
Like, no, if
well, it depends on what
profit,
you're looking to do.
If you can make enough profit, you know, popping them, just to like break even, and then, like, say you're making $40 each one you open and you paid 30. If you do that enough times that you got a bunch of them paid for and you sit on those, that's fine. But, like, I don't know if I'm necessarily going to pop all of them because I don't know which one is just going to go insane.
I want to play with them. I want to play. I actually like, I remember when the original ones came out, I liked playing Commander with the powered down decks like that. It kind of had the more kitchen table feel to it.
That was the opposite of my experience. My buddy Kyle and I bought a bunch of them, and we just like, hey, let's build EDH decks, because there's an EDH league at our local store. And we played the powered down ones, and we're like, this just kind of sucks. We're like, we can make these decks good, but we'd have to spend, like, actual money on this. And, like, I didn't play EDH again for another 2 years.
Were you playing against real decks, or were you playing against the other precons?
The other precons.
Huh. Well, see, I actually liked, literally sat at the kitchen table with a buddy who had bought all five of them. We just swapped the dice around and ran them up against each other. It was kind of fun, just to, you know, go back to the old non-spiky days.
I mean, seems fine. They're just, yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that would be our advice. Like, you don't have to bust these open. I'm probably going to sit on quite a few of them.
Yeah. I mean, I like you said, I'm going to probably sell enough of them to make my money back and then sit on a number of them. But, I mean, if they're selling for enough right now, I'll take the quick profit too. It depends on how long it takes for them to go up to. Because it's one of those things, like, if every time they run out of off the shelves, they're going to reprint them, that's different than, oh, you know, we ran out, so there'll be another print run in 2 months. Like, if they're continually printing them over and over and over again, then obviously the price is going to take a lot longer to go up. And it also depends on how long they print them for, too.
So what do we think that these are going to do to... Okay, it's obvious that the price of Sol Ring is going to go back down. When the Commander decks got printed in the first place, Sol Ring went from like $10 to like $5, and now it's back up to 10. So this printing is going to make Sol Ring probably a $5 card. Like, that seems pretty obvious. What about the stuff that's not in these decks, that goes in all the EDH decks? Could that stuff go up?
Like Synthesized Divining Top and stuff like that?
Well, stuff that's going to be in every deck. Top doesn't go in every deck, but every deck I know of runs Thran Dynamo. It runs Solemn Simulacrum. It runs Lightning Greaves and Swiftfoot Boots. Chromatic Lantern. So a lot of just boilerplate stuff like that.
Swiftfoot Boots is in every one of these.
Okay. What a.
So that card obviously is going to tank. Grief's probably going to go up, right?
So, okay, let's talk Thran Dynamo. Let's talk Solemn Simulacrum. Let's talk Chromatic Lantern. Let's talk Gilded Lotus. Some of those cards got reprinted in the FTV, but is that, like, O-Stone? Could O-Stone go up, not being in these sets?
Maybe. I think O-Stone's price at this point is also tied to Modern, so it's hard to predict.
But I just, like, in general, what is the effect of these sets going to be on the stuff that's not in them? And that would be strictly based on making EDH more appealing. Are we thinking this is going to forge a new wave of EDH players? Or is it just going to give the players more? But say a guy's got 5 EDH decks, but now he makes 5 more. Like, he's going to need 5 more Chromatic Lanterns. So even if no new players start, players still going to build more decks, presumably, without cannibalizing the old ones.
I would say that they go up, just probably not the same level of spike that they did last time. That's my take on it.
I would say that's fair. I think the last time it made non-EDH players into EDH players. Right. I think it's going to happen to a much lesser extent this time, because a lot of the people that were going to start have started.
Right.
I think before, too, nobody really thought about buying these necessarily for value. And now everyone's kind of looking at them for that value. It's going to be a lot harder to find it.
So, Ryan, tell us about your deck. I want to hear about your block deck that you got going on.
Oh, yeah. Did you get that list I sent you for?
Yeah, I played with it, and it was okay. I didn't really get to jam a lot of games. I got crushed by, like, a green devotion deck. Arbor Colossus is not many ways you could beat Arbor Colossus.
It's one of the hardest decks to play against. That's one of the bad matchups, like that and red-green. And I figured out just how to beat them. Like, you have to just tempo them out with the Griptides and the Voyage's Ends. Do you have the list in front of you by any chance? I don't have it up.
Why don't you tell us about the list?
All right, so the deck is kind of all over the place. It's going to sound like a lot of, you know, random amounts of cards, but it's been tested out, and the deck does involve a lot of scry, so it's fairly easy to find what you need at a particular time. Currently, my list is 4 Dissolve, 4 Voyage's End, 4 Omen Speaker, 2 Lightning Strike, 1 Anger of the Gods, 2 Pelokranos, 4 Nylea's Presence, 4 Sylvan Caryatid, 3 Ashiok, 2 Reaper of the Wilds, 3 Steam Auguries, 2 Xenagos, and my personal favorite card in this deck, 1 Colossus of Akros. We'll get to that card in a moment. The mana base is actually sounds pretty horrific for being 4 color, but you really have no mana issues. First off, you have the 4 Caryatids and the 4 Presences, and I believe it was something like 24 cards in the deck scry or draw you cards. And so your mana base looks like 3 Temple of Deceit, 4 Temple of Abandon, 4 Temple of Mystery, 4 Islands, 3 Mountains, and 6 Forests. And with the Reaper and the Ashiok, I'm only running the Temples and then the other 8 ways of producing black mana, but I haven't had any issues yet. I'm still able to consistently cast turn 3 Ashiok, even though most of the time that's not the correct play. But what the deck really does is you play out turn 2 some way to fix your mana, or hold back a bounce spell if you're playing against the red-white or blue-white aggro decks. Really, you just have to keep them off their first couple turns, slam an Omen Speaker, force them into playing tricks to get around it, and then you set yourself up for, if you're playing a mid-range deck, you want to land an Ashiok as soon as possible, like that's your win condition versus these red-green decks. Versus your aggro decks, you really just want to kind of force them to 2-for-1 themselves to trying to get around things, and then you have that one of Anger of the Gods to go look for. It sounds like, you know, obviously one of is going to be hard to find, but like I said, with all the scry and stuff, you'd be amazed how often you could find cards in this deck. Pelokranos comes down on turn 3, hopefully, versus that deck as well. The decks I'm having the biggest issue with are definitely, like, the mono-green and the red-green deck, just because they can stay on the same pace with me because they have the Caryatids as well. And sometimes they just get ahead of you and are able to play 2 large guys before you can either tempo them out or play large guys of your own. And the one thing that I found in that matchup that's huge is the Colossus of Akros. They have almost no way of dealing with that guy. I've never seen anyone play Defeated in Antiquity against me. I have had it Griptided once. And then someone Viper's snagged it, or whatever the one mana black Viper Snare or Viper's Kiss or whatever that is, to make it so I couldn't monsters it. But you drop that guy as early as turn 5 or 6 if you have Xenagos out, usually closer to turn 7 or 8 after just kind of controlling the board. And he just sits there and blocks everything. There's nothing that can get past him. Most of the decks that I found come down to Voltroning 1 or 2 guys, and he can sit back, and then when you finally are ready to swing, I mean, he can deal 20 in a turn. And 10 mana is not insurmountable in block at all. It's a fairly slow format, even though a lot of the decks are these fast aggro. They just end up, like, trading so many guys, you end up going into this late game. And this deck is very much about card advantage in the late game. And, I mean, I guess to get to the board, it is the three prognostic sphinx that's against, you know, any of your like mono black decks with targeting removal, and or just you want to have more flyers to be able to deal with some of the skies deck. There's not a lot of that out there though. Two Griptides, that's mainly against the red green. You do bring it in against the red white aggro, but not against the blue white one, just because they have counter spells as well in some of those versions. One Annul, which is kind of my floating spot right now. I just can't find a card that I like better. And there's a lot of matchups like the mono black where like one Annul makes the difference. Like it's that extra counter spell you kind of want to be able to tap out for something, or not almost tap out for something, and still be able to hold back to like counter Erebos, which is a bad card. And obviously the whip is difficult as well. Two Lightning Strikes and two Anger of the Gods. That's first the aggro. Two Faded in Antiquity. That's just to take out gods. And also like it comes in automatically against mono black because they have the whip and the god, and sometimes they'll run like Baleful Eidolon that can cause problems. One more Reaper, one more Ashiok, and one more Steamogre, and those just come in versus the late game control decks, just to have more threats.
So tell me, it sounds like an interesting control deck. Why win Anger of the Gods? Like, it seems to me like Anger of the Gods is maybe a two of, like, it definitely seems not like the type of card you typically want one of, because like, the one of is usually supposed to be like this one late game, you know, game breaking card where like all the control decks are on one Aetherling. Anger seems like the sort of thing you want more of, or you want none of. So like, is your plan just to control the early game, and like, are you basically just trying to play as a control deck or like a tempo deck or what?
Well, here's the main reason. So what I've learned versus these blue white and red white aggro decks is it's not about killing every creature they play. It's just about keeping certain ones off the field, like the Phalanx Leader and stuff like that. You have to just know which creatures you care about, and the other ones are usually like, they can have a favorite hoplite in play, but if they want to target that a bunch of times, they're getting a very small incremental amount of value off it. Like, who cares if it's a 2-3 or a 3-4? I can deal with those cards. It's the getting these control armies. So you kill those with your individual, your Voyage's Ends, your Lightning Strikes to keep those tempoed out, but eventually they can amass enough creatures. So it really is a late game card, even though it seems like it's something you would want early game. And obviously if you have it early game and you can, you know, sometimes just turn three, they went turn one guy, turn two guy, and they, instead of holding back their God's Willing, they played Fabled Hero to try and get the major advantage, and then you Anger out. But I mean, that's not really what it's there for. It's there to control those key creatures. And then when it comes down to that late game where they may have amassed four or five guys and can start poking in there and getting to your planeswalkers or getting to your life total, it lets you kind of reset that every once in a while.
Playing like that sort of thing, playing one, you never find, like, just very difficult to find one of. And I don't care how much try you have, like, it's still just difficult because...
It is difficult, but you don't need it. You don't necessarily need the card to beat the deck is the point. Like, they're already not bad matchups, but it helps you in those situations. And I've played two, and there's so many times, like, I put the second Lightning Strike back in because there's so many more times where I don't need to Anger the Gods. And there's a lot of times when I don't want to Anger the Gods because I run Caryatids and Omen Speakers as well.
Right, exactly.
And clearing those guys is not always great. And Xenagos tokens will die. Xenagos is probably the next card that I'm looking to cut. I like him a lot because he can just let you have these turns where you're able to, like, play a creature off of Ashiok, and you have like a Caryatid play and some other, like an Omen Speaker or something like that. And you can play a Reaper while being able to leave back Dissolve, plus you're plussing Ashy, or the Xenagos each time. But there's so many decks running Lightning Strike out there that Xenagos really just, he doesn't live very long. Cause like very rarely do you want to play him and plus one in that turn. And so a lot of times like you zero him, you get a Satyr, and then he gets Lightning Striked, which is not what this deck wants to be doing on turn three or turn four. And I just never find a good time. Like whenever he's in my hand with a bunch of other four drops, he's usually the last one to get played. And then at that point, he's usually the least relevant.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed with that deck though is it felt kind of just threat light. Like you're able to get through most of your deck, but you're just not drawing what you want. You want to get the Sphinxes and maybe the Colossus, but even then the Sphinx only doing 3 power damage.
Well,
and
that's actually like you played the old list. That's what I've added in the Reaper of the Wilds and the Pelocronosis since then. And then you have the Ash, cause I don't think, I sent you the list with Ashiok, did I?
Yeah, with Ashiok.
Okay, so that was when I first changed over. The deck's taken quite a few turns. Like, the Reaper of the Wilds, I didn't know if the black mana could be supported for them. And, I mean, I don't think I can play Hero's Demise yet. Anger of the Gods was a bit of a stretch. Like, as much as I want to play Hero's Demise, or Hero's Downfall, excuse me, I just don't think I can give up Steamogre. Like, as underwhelming as that card is in Standard in Block, it's exactly what you want. Because there's so many of these situations where, especially in a deck like this where I have so many answers to things, there's more often than that where like you split a pile where it's like, okay, you give me Dissolve and a Lightning Strike, or you give me like a Land, Omen Speaker, and a Voyage's End. And any of those piles I'm okay with. And sometimes they know what you're looking for, and you may already have it in hand because you've scryed and drawn so many other cards that you're like, okay, well, they know I really need a Griptide here, so I'm going to put this 4-1 Griptide pile. They're not going to give me the Griptide even though I already have one in hand, and you just get to draw 4 free cards from it.
So how well have you been doing with it? I mean, obviously, block at this point is very, very new, and yeah, not a card pool.
Yeah, the metagame has... It's come down to about 5 different decks with like a couple of outliers that I see every once in a while. And like variations, like the red, green, blue is kind of a variation of the original red, green deck. It's, you know, like they have the same core concept. But, I invested about 100 ticks into this deck. I mean, and that was also to play some limited. And right now, let's see, just from winnings and stuff. I mean, I've also cashed in for a couple of extra drafts, so this is not completely what I have. But I ran that all the way down, and right now I have 4 ticks and 12 packs. So, I mean, that's just purely from winning constructed. So I'm obviously, like, I'm up 12 packs. I think I had, like, 6 tickets when I started playing constructed queues. So I'm essentially up 12 or 11 packs, I guess, which is not bad. And I've probably played 40 games. So I'm saying I'm in, like, the 65 percentile win ratio, which is, I mean, not bad. That's right where you want to be with any deck. And that's enough to keep grinding on Modo. So, like, it's... I think a good enough 2-man deck. I have not done any dailies yet. I did do 1 8-man. Like, I've only actually sat in 1 long enough for it to fire. And I did win that, but like, I haven't been able to get real testing because I haven't got to do any dailies. So, we'll see.
We'll see that. We gotta get some more brews on the cast, so, I'll check it out. I'll be doing some brewing myself when I get some time off of work and being able to think straight. But, yeah, so, you know, we need to get some more of that. I will do some testing and see if we can get Orion to become the block master.
Yeah, I really enjoy block when a new set comes out. I think one of the most, not necessarily skill intensive, but it almost feels like a limited format when you only have one set to work with. And it really, you just kind of have to figure out how everything works together. Like, it's a lot more fun. The more cards you introduce, just the more broken combos you have, or the more defined metagame you have.
That's fair.
I wish block were played more on paper. Like, I remember even terrible blocks. Like, Kamigawa block was such a good block constructed format.
Yeah,
like,
it was.
It was kind of shitty and limited, and it didn't really add much to standard. But Kamigawa block was so much fun.
Yeah. I like that block is very powered down, and there's a lot of different decks because of that. And it's, you know, pretty unexplored the vast majority of the time. So yeah. Like right now, it does seem like it would be kind of a fun time to play block.
It really is. I mean, even though like I said, there's a 5 to 6 decks that are like the big decks. There's still plenty of, like, I've lost more to the decks that I don't see very often than I have to the metagame decks because I'm used to playing against them and I know what their game plan is. All of a sudden the time that the guy goes, you know, like I played against Mono Red once and just got pushed in. I had no clue what I was doing against this guy. Like, I thought he was on burn like the first game and he ran like, Purphoros and, some token. Oh, and a Chrome Soldier or Crusader or whatever to make tokens. And so I thought I was ready for that plan. And, he didn't really have that many creatures individually by themselves. So I didn't board in the Anger of the Gods. And then suddenly, like, the next game, he was Minotaurs. Like, he played black mana and stomped me down with Minotaurs, which sounded goofy, but... Like,
Minotaur tribal, yeah.
It's just, like, block, I feel like, comes down to so much more about knowing what you're playing against than necessarily having your busted cards, because you all have this really small card pool to work with. You, like, the variations of the decks almost start to blend together. Like, there's plenty of decks that they might play a separate color, but they have the same game plan. Like, red-white and red-blue are 2 very different aggro decks, but they play a lot of the same cards. Like, I don't know. It's hard to explain without actually playing block, but I like it a lot.
Well, we look forward to hearing more of your adventures, and if anybody else out there wants to play some block, hit up Ryan. You know, jam some games out there. Get it going. And if you want to write for the website, hit up Jason Ault. We need to get you just a Jason E. Ault email. You know, it's a little bit easier just to send that.
Are you implying that I should get my own email address, Marcel?
I'm implying you should get an email address that matches your name so I don't have to say Jason17, I don't know what the fuck. It's hard to...
Marcel is trying to spit out is altjason17@gmail, which will be in the show notes. If you're interested in writing for the website brainstormbrewery.com, go ahead and hit me up at that website, that email address, and, we'll get you through the process to submit an article to the site. We are looking for a few more writers. Most of the writers that we have writing for us right now are fans just like you, and they've contributed some pretty good stuff. So if you think it's something you could do and you're interested in, go ahead and hit me up, and I'll get back to you.
We got the data mine for picks of the week. You want to get that and get some free tokens and get a potential play mat and some other goodies, hit us up on email at brainstormbrew@gmail.com. That's the only way you can enter in is by email, just so we can make things simpler for us to keep track of everything. And we got some new tokens coming out. We're going to keep the lid on this for right now, but I guarantee you'll like them. So look forward to that. And this is Brainstorm Brewery. Is there any more shameless plugs we can go about for the night?
Buy our t-shirts, write articles for our site, wait for our tokens, and what the hell, buy Star Realms when it comes out.
And play Merfolk.
Or Assassin's Creed 4. That game is the jam.
FTL. Get FTL. Faster than light. That's the game.
Go learn what the Fox says, and then go to nerdballmagazine.com and read about fantasy football.
Nobody cares what the
Fox says. Today's Friday. That means that Halloween candy will be 50% off at the store, so go buy that too.
There you go.
That's value right there.
That is. Rot your teeth at twice the speed. Abrupt decay.
You've been sitting on that for a whole year. It's like, guys, can we talk about candy on the cast tonight? No, Marcel. God damn it, I got a candy joke.
I'll fit it in one way or another.
That's for 50 episodes, he was harping on it.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
As long as our email addresses are out there, if you have suggestions for what you'd like us to do for episode 100, we actually don't really know.
We ended the recording a while ago.
What? Why?
Yes.
But he's 100%. Do you not?
Why do we do that? Why do we do that? That's always good stuff. You just leave good stuff on the cutting room floor, you fuck.
No, Jason, you sound so just like,
you just sound like you're trying to make stuff up so you don't have to be quiet. Like, not you, but that's how the end of our cast sounds.
Yeah, you sound mechanically too, also near the end. It's just like you're rattling off.
Oh my god.
You gotta have some. Though. You do. You're just the end of that. You're like a fucking plug Nazi.
What the fuck, say?
Stop it.
I'm sorry I didn't feel like talking about a fucking block deck that nobody cares about for 15 minutes.
You talked about that was 10 minutes, and then you talked about fucking EDH for 10 minutes, and I was just fucking, fell asleep.
That's financially goddamn irrelevant.
I fell asleep, actually, for like 2 minutes.
Tired. Dude, I fell asleep during the block deck thing, kind of. It sounds interesting, but I don't know how much people will care. But it doesn't matter, it's fine.
Well, they tell us they don't, but we don't listen to people.
No, a lot of people recently have been telling us that, why don't you guys do, actual talking about playing and stuff. And I think, when we weren't actually playing anything, then, it sucked. But I've been playing, I'm playing the deck currently.
They want to hear Jeff talk about playing. They want to hear, talk about playing. They don't give a fuck what you're playing in block.